bringing you in-depth discussion from one of the rad groups of online writers covering the Edmonton Oilers. Are you ready for Oilers Overtime? Join us as we talk news, rumors, trades, player grades, game results, and more, all featured on one of the most glorified teams in the NHL. From the great one to the next one, from the boys on the bus to the decade of darkness, this is Oilers Overtime.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another edition of Oilers Overtime. My name is Jim Parsons, a member of the Hockey Raiders. We've got our full cast and crew with us tonight. Brian Swain is up in, well, to my left, you're right, I guess. Brian, how are you?
Doing well, Jim. How are you?
I'm doing okay. It's not been the greatest news day for Oilers fans, but we'll get to that in a second. Colton Pankey is with us as well. Colton, how are you? Oh, I think he might be frozen. We'll see if we can get him, but... Oh, there he is. Colton, you with us? Can you hear us okay, buddy?
Yeah, I'm good. How are you?
Good. Glitchy McGlitcherson over there, but we'll get you all figured out here as we go. And then, of course, Julian Mongelo's with us. Julian, how are you?
Doing good. I'm doing better than the Oilers. Not too many of them on the shelf right now, so hopefully they can get healthy soon.
Yes, and I think you're doing better than Colton's Wi-Fi connection, but hopefully we'll get that figured out here in the next couple seconds and it won't be much of a deal. But yes, it was a very interesting day, following up a number of interesting days for injuries for the Oilers. Like, we've kind of been able to say, hey, we escaped relatively scot-free for most of the injuries. Like, we've seen people getting teams like the Islanders and the Senators, and these guys just get drilled with COVID and people missing, and then a bunch of injuries to certain people. And then the Oilers were kind of like not having to do any of this stuff and worry about it. Then all of a sudden, right, Darnell Nurse goes down, Duncan Keith goes down, Devin Shore goes down. We knew about Mike Smith, but it looks longer than, you know, we anticipated originally. Now Cody Ceci is the latest news. Apparently he's in COVID protocol. I don't know. Do you guys know, has he been diagnosed as actually having COVID?
Supposedly, if you're in protocol, you've tested positive, but it's possible that could be a false positive. And I think if he gets, like, from my understanding is that there are still ways that if he tests negative, he could play tomorrow. I don't know. Is that your understanding, Julian?
I believe it's something like that. I think if he gets a negative test because he's vaccinated, he's able to play.
Yeah, that's exactly it. So, I mean, he's not actually 100% out for tomorrow, but I mean, the odds that it's kind of like Puljujärvi last year, right? He tested positive, missed the one game, but then was able to come back and play a couple games after that.
It's a fluid situation, one of those ones.
Yeah, I remember hearing about that and then being like, oh, he came back pretty quick. So that was kind of good news. Hopefully it's that situation. The Oilers took it safe and canceled practice today anyway, just to make sure that this didn't get out of hand, because what they don't want is a situation that has happened with some of these other teams. Colton, while we've got you here and everything's working okay, what does this mean, though? Cody Ceci possibly not playing. Still, Darnell Nurse is not back. Dave Tippett has said he's probably the closest to returning, but he still needs to be cleared by medical staff before he can come back. So that's good news. But Duncan Keith is not quite ready to go. He was put on IR today and was said that if it's a personal choice for him. If he's ready, he'll play. If he doesn't feel ready, he won't. Slater Cuckoo's out. Cody Ceci's now probably out. I mean, this is a pretty depleted blue line, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I can't remember the last time I've seen the blue line for the Oilers this beaten up right now. It's crazy. I think so far, I mean, they've weathered the storm pretty well. They've had guys step up. Broberg's played a ton of minutes. And then I honestly thought the losses of Nurse and a few guys would have bigger impacts than they have so far, which is a good thing. Obviously, other guys have stepped up. But like you said, hopefully Nurse is able to come back soon, a couple other guys, because they're really in the cupboards right now.
Well, Colton mentioned it, Brian. I'll ask you the same question. Like, how big is it that Chris Russell has stepped up and broke the record all time for block shots? And then he was ranked somewhere, I think Dom Lecision or something like that from The Athletic did a story that he is like ranked in the top like 25 of puck moving defensemen out of all three zones. Like, what a strange stat for Chris Russell of all people to be in, right? But he's really stepped up. I mean, how important has it been that Broberg, Russell, even Lagesson to a smaller degree have really stepped in here and kind of taken the load?
Yeah, I mean, this team is they're 2-0 without Duncan and Nurse, Duncan Keith and Nurse. So I've been really impressed. I'll just follow up on what Colton said there is everyone has stepped in. The young guys, Broberg, Bouchard is playing some big minutes. And Russell, a guy who's kind of always been the enemy in advanced stats. You know, you could look at Russell out there on the ice, and the guy's an absolute warrior, right? By the eye test, how can you not love him? By the advanced metrics, you can find some flaws in his game. So I thought it was kind of cool to see to hear that stat, because that's of all the things that I would expect him to score well in, puck movement not necessarily one of them, right?
Yeah, yeah. I laughed out loud when Zach Kassian said, "Look, I'd rather get punched in the face than block a shot." Right, and he's blocked 2,000 of them. Like it's pretty crazy when you think about what Chris Russell has done. Right, Julian, what would you suggest? Like Cody Ceci, I suppose is he considered the Oilers now shutdown defenseman without Adam Larson? Is he that guy? So how big of a loss is this that Cody Ceci might not be in the game against Pittsburgh? And of all teams, Pittsburgh, right, the team that he played for last year.
Yeah, I mean, things escalated quickly for him to be thrown into the shutdown role. I mean, that's what he was kind of brought in to do anyway. But I think we kind of need to see it develop more, and we have seen it develop. And he's really taken the reins because of those losses that we mentioned. So to see him be able to do that, and now that he's not going to be in the lineup, it just means, like we said, somebody else is going to have to step up. And I'm assuming that's going to be Russell. And it looks like it's going to be Broberg as well. I would assume if CC is out, Russell's going to move over to the right side because they brought Nema Line in, which would probably leave them with having to shift Russell to the right-hand side if he wasn't already playing there. I'm not sure if he was or not. But
I'm sure he was playing left considering who was out of the lineup.
Yeah, because considering who they have left, it's just Broberg, Legason, and... who's the other left shot? I can't even keep track of them because they're shuffling around so quick. It's pretty depleted. So, I mean, hopefully he's not out because they really need him. And if he is, then just next guy up mentality for them. And just I want to shout out my boy, Chris Russell, because, you know, I've been a big fan of his. We've talked about it in the past. So like Brian is with Skinner, Turrison and Russell's are my boys. So shout out to him. I heard he's not the best dresser, but he gets it done on the ice.
Colton, do you think there's a chance? Like at what point is it too many losses before this kind of starts? Like Brian mentioned, they're 2-0 without Duncan Keith. They played pretty good. I mean, they kind of had a stinker against Dallas, I think it was, right? But they've played pretty well without these guys. But is there a point when you like start to miss so many defensemen that you're like, come on, like seriously, what are we looking at here? Like how big of a loss is CC on his own? Maybe not a huge loss, right? But when you add it to the other ones, do they have a shot against Pittsburgh on Wednesday?
I mean, they have a shot. Yeah. I think in the short term, it's not a huge deal. Obviously over the course of it, if these injuries were long-term, then Holland would definitely need to consider making some trades. But I think, like you said, if Nurse is expected to be back soon, then I think they can continue to weather the storm a bit more. Like Brian said, next guy up kind of mentality. I do think, it, like I said, if it's longer term, it turns into more of an issue. But I think just with how good the team is up front, obviously McDavid, Drysdale, I think they are good enough that they can handle this for the short term.
So it's becoming a matter of outscoring the other team. Is that what we're saying right now?
For the time being, if that's the way they have to play, I mean, you're not really going to complain. It's more like you just get it done any way you can right now. So
take 6-7-6 wins, 8-5, right?
Take them as they come. They don't ask how. They ask how many, right?
Yeah.
I mean, Pittsburgh, for all their offensive weapons, like they've been struggling to score lately. I think they've got one goal each of the last two games, right?
Jari's been really good for them too. He's kind of stepped up recently. So, I mean, it might be a little bit of a struggle to get him by him. But I just think that I just want to touch on the adversity they faced. I think it's actually good that they're going through this now and looking at that timeline of, you know, would you rather this happen now where you know what you have in your prospects that could come up and step in, rather than something like this where two or three injuries happen closer to the end of the year where you're heading into the playoffs and, you know, at least Tippett now can see which guys he knows he can trust in what roles and to what capacity. So I think it's actually better that they have a little bit of a lead in the standings now that they can not sacrifice games, but you know, they can afford to lose them at this point. Until they get guys back.
They've banked a few points and they've got a little cushion here, right? So if they lose a couple in a row, it's not going to kill them. for sure. That brings up a good point. I was going to ask each one of you guys this. What do you think about this? Because there's kind of a debate going on right now. Like Philip Broberg, he's been mentioned by a couple of people already in this video, has played fairly well. Like he's come in and they figured he'd be okay, but we didn't really know. He's never played an NHL game. And he comes in, he's played not what, four games? And he's looked solid, like really steady. He plays more minutes every game he plays, to the last point where he led the team, or at least defenseman, with like 23 minutes or something. Brian, I'll start with you. What do you do with Broberg? So right now it's not a concern because Nurse isn't coming back yet. And it doesn't look like Keith is going to be playing tomorrow. So he's probably still in the lineup. But when these guys are healthy, and that's maybe a week, two at the most, what do you do with Broberg? Do you keep him? Has he earned the right to get more time with the Oilers? Or do you push him back down to Bakersfield and say, thanks for your service, we'll see you again in a month?
Is it possible to answer yes to both? Like, yeah, he's earned the right.
But yes, he's going back.
Yes, he's going back. Yeah. Yeah, it's a tough one. I don't know what I would do, to be honest. I've been really impressed with him. I think him being like, I think he might present a better option than say like Slater Cuckoo, if you want to keep him around as like a seventh defenseman or something. Right. Then we can go to the old time honored debate of whether it's more valuable for him to be getting all those reps in, playing lots of heavy minutes and in an important role down in Bakersfield, or is he like Bouchard, where he actually benefits from being around the team, even if he's not playing, and just soaking up the NHL atmosphere and learning from the veterans? I mean, like, we sat here last year and said all along, like, well, you know, this is really unfortunate for Bouchard because he's basically losing this season, right? He played whatever 12 games and didn't go to Bakersfield, but he said himself, and I think the results have borne it out that he just benefited from being around the team. So it's a tough one. I mean, you it's not just about what it means for him and the team now. It's also in his development process, because we forget, as good as he looked, right, he's still a very young defenseman.
Okay. So you fairly argued both sides. But which would you do if you have to make a choice? If you're hauling, yeah, and you got to move him or you got to keep him, what do you do?
So there's like a gun to my head and I absolutely have to make a decision.
Yeah, it's a little drastic, but sure.
Sure. Okay. Yeah, I'm at the gallows pull here. I keep him. I keep him up.
All right. That's one. Colton, what do you do?
I think I'd go the opposite way here. I know last year Bouchard did say he wanted to be up with the team, but I just think with Broberg, his first season in North America and everything, I think it's more beneficial for him to play a ton of minutes, and that obviously would come in the AHL. So I think just develop him further and play him a ton of minutes in the minors. And I think with Ken Holland in charge, I know he was there last year with Bouchard too, but a bit of different circumstances, I think Holland will probably rather him develop further in the minors.
Okay, so we're even. Julian, what do you think here?
I'll break the tie. I think I'm leaning to more what Colton's saying, just because he hasn't been in North America as long as Bouchard has. So for me, that's kind of the reason I would probably send him back down, let him absorb those minutes in the minors, and he'll most likely be up coming closer to playoff time, just to be up around the team and stuff like that, like Bouchard was. I mean, he's played great, so it's hard to argue, like Brian was saying, and I don't disagree with him to keep him up. I would even maybe put it onto, you know, what's best for Broberg's development. Maybe go to Broberg like you did with Bouchard, say, would you rather be up here or would you rather not? Because to me, at the end of the day, you would probably put Russell in ahead of him if push came to shove come playoff time. Like, that's just the way I see it, is that, you know, Cuckoo and Russell are still ahead of him if they had to go into the game. In a winner take all playoff game. That's the way I still see it. So I think it's just beneficial. You might be best to just say, what do you want to do, Broberg, and then go from there.
Yeah, it's an interesting situation, because we think about Broberg now as a guy who hasn't played very many NHL games, but he's actually played almost just as many AHL games. Like, he's really not played very many AHL games either, right? So it would be one thing if he'd been down in the minors and played a whole bunch and we'd like, yeah, he's too good for that league. Like, he's been there. He's yeah, played, he's getting points. He's playing 26, 27, 28 minutes a game. He shouldn't be there. Right. That'd be one thing, but we haven't even seen that much from him yet. Like, he hasn't been healthy enough, or he hasn't been over there. He's not been in North America. So it's one of those things where you can use the excuse and say, hey, look, we haven't really gotten a good glimpse of how good you are in the AHL. We know what you've done here in the NHL. It's been really cool. And we greatly appreciate it. And this is going to sound terrible to say, but I'll say this just because if he has a bad game, that might actually be helpful when it comes to having this decision be made. You know what I mean? Like, because right now he's playing so well that it's like, man, if you do that, everybody's going to be like, why did you do that? He's playing so good. But if he has a bad game, then you can quickly go and say, this is what you get with a rookie, right? You get somebody who plays some really good games and then you play a really bad game. And so he might need a little more time. It makes the decision easy. But I get where you're coming from, Julian. Like, if he's not played a lot of games, yes, I go with Russell in the playoffs. But if Broberg stays up here for a month or two because injuries just happen to last longer and he keeps doing what he's doing, I don't know if I pick him, if I pick Russell over him.
I agree with that.
You know what I mean? Like, if he shows you that he can play 17 to 22 minutes a night and you've got Duncan Keith, who you're not quite sure can play, you know, 20, whatever, and then who knows, right? Like, it really depends on what happens here over the next couple weeks. I'm with you guys right now. I'm thinking I probably send him back, but there's so many maybes, right? Like, we don't know how long these injuries are going to be. We don't know how he's going to play. If he has a little hiccup here, then it all really depends. But
Can I change my vote?
It's all right to not.
You guys have talked me out of my own opinion in here. So
that happens. Yeah, no, but he's played great. I mean, you can't really. How can he complain? Right?
The way he's climbed the minutes is what does it for me. Like, he just kind of shot up there from 14 to 23 and then leading the team, leading the defenseman, sorry. So that was the most shocking for me. He's just been so sound.
But we all figured the Oilers were screwed, right? Like, when Nurse went down and the Keith went down, we're like, oh man, they're so screwed. And then Brober comes in and he's like, Dad missed the beat. You know, like, it's like, I've been here all the time, right? Like, that's what it looks like. It's just it's great. He hasn't played perfect, but I mean, he's been so solid. You can't even. How can you possibly complain, right? He looks fantastic. All right, let's switch gears a little bit here. Let's talk a little bit about Jake DeBrusk, because there's a lot of talk about DeBrusk right now, the way that he is officially asked now for a trade from the Boston Bruins. They healthy scratched him. He's been a little inconsistent this season. There's a high ceiling with this guy. Lots of talk because he's an Edmonton-born kid. His dad works with the Oilers, but real close to the Oilers, doing the commentary for Sportsnet. There's a logical connection here between these two teams. So I'll go around again. This time we'll go in reverse. Julian, I'll start with you. Would you have any interest, if you're the Edmonton Oilers, in Jake DeBrusk?
I mean, I would definitely kick tires on it. It just kind of makes it difficult with the cap situation, I think. And it all depends what you're going to give up at the end. Like, to me, the only way I do it is if there's some sort of way that, like, you know, you're going to have to pay Yamamoto, which he hasn't even forced your hand to do this, but if he's going to command somewhere around that money in the future, then I'd be okay with doing a deal that involves Yamamoto and worrying about the rest later. I think that's the only fit I really see is that. And there would obviously have to be some other pieces involved, not just a one-for-one swap. So I just think that at this point, DeBrusk is more established and he's, you know, kind of been in and out with falling out with Boston. So I think a fresh start would be good for him. And Yamamoto's kind of the same way with us. Like, he's shown glimpses, but it's the consistency that hasn't been there. So I think it could be a natural fit to swap those guys. And it's something that I would definitely explore, but I think the cap situation makes it too hard because I think DeBrusk's making just over 3.5. So that's something that would require some other contracts to be shuffled around in order to fit him in too.
Okay, I don't think this is going to happen, but theoretically speaking, let's just give this, let's make it easy. Let's say Boston likes Kyler Yamamoto. They're like, cool, we like Kyler Yamamoto. We're in. And they have to retain half of Jake DeBrusk's salary because he's only got 1 year left before he's an RFA. So they cut the 50%, which makes it almost an even contract because they think he's like 3.6 something million, right?
3.6.
Yamamoto is just over a million or something. So it's not that far off if you do that. Would you make that trade? Would you trade Yamamoto for half of Jake DeBrusk?
One for one?
Yeah.
I think I would do that personally.
Okay. Colton, would you have any interest in Jake DeBrusk? And one, would you do Julian's trade? And two, would you even consider him as a player that you really should look at?
Well, like, the Yamamoto trade, obviously, again, like you said, dollars aside, you know, player for player wise, I would, but I think you have to be careful with locker room chemistry too. And I know the guys in the Oilers room really do like Yamamoto. So you just have to wonder how that could potentially shake up the locker room a little bit, just with how good they're playing right now. I don't know how they would respond to that, but as far as actually trading for DeBrusk, I just think, with his cap hit, I mean, obviously, if the Bruins retained, then maybe I'd be a bit more interested. But there's just so many inconsistencies that aren't only this year, but last year as well. It seems like when he's not scoring, he doesn't really provide a whole lot else. obviously there's still a pretty big ceiling for him, but I seen today that there's like eight teams or something that have already kicked the tires on him. So I feel like he's not going to go for as cheap as maybe some people are hoping. So I'd probably steer clear myself.
Yeah. Okay. That's fair. Brian, what about you? What would you do here?
Yeah. No bueno here too. I just, Colton pretty much made every point that I had. Like, I think there'll be it's a really good point about the locker room chemistry, and how Yamamoto fits in and what this could do to the team. And especially with respect to how they're playing now, like, it's almost kind of like, don't try to fix what ain't broke. I don't know what DeBrusque would give you that you're missing right now. And especially if you're taking Yamamoto out of the equation, like Colton was saying, I don't know what else DeBrusque brings to the game if he's not scoring. And he's been pretty inconsistent scoring wise. Yeah, he does have like 27 goal season. I think he scored at about a rate of 20 per 82 games in his career, but it's been pretty hit and miss. And especially the last couple seasons, he hasn't been doing it. He is still young. He's got that potential. He's got that high ceiling, so he could tap into it. But there's just too many what ifs. And then when you throw on top of that, the fact that there are that many teams interested, who knows what you end up paying for him. So, I mean, if it is Yamamoto straight up, and if they eat some of the salary, that is very tempting. That is something you'd have to, I think, really think long and hard about. But I still like what Yamamoto brings more in an all-around game to the team, and that he can actually impact the game positively when he's not scoring. And I don't know if the same can be said for DeBrusque.
Okay, I'm going to mention a name that might scare some people, but I see some very very big similarities between Jake DeBrusque and this player. Now, Jake DeBrusque is a local kid, a little different situation. Andreas Athanasiou. Remember when we went after him and there was a guy had a 30 goal season. Everybody's like, oh my God, he's going to be perfect. And he did squat beans, did nothing, did absolutely. And he still hasn't done much since he left here. Right. Mm-hmm. Jake DeBrusque might not be that, but he might be that. Right? Like, yeah. We don't know. And that's the thing about Jake DeBrusque. Yes, everybody talks about his potential to score 20 to 30 goals, but he's only done it once and he's not ever really come close again. And he's super inconsistent. I don't go near this. Like, if I am the Oilers, maybe I look at this next year, but here's my bigger concern if I'm Ken Holland, right? One, I need a rental. Jake DeBrusque isn't really that. He's a pending RFA who has arbitration rights. So he's going to make sure that he's going to get a certain amount of money if you re-sign him. I don't think the Oilers have room to do that because they want Puljujärvi and they're going to pay to get him. And you never know what Yamamoto does this season, right? He could earn himself a couple $1 million, but I still like Kyler Yamamoto at $2 million versus Jake DeBrusque at 3.5 to 4, right? So I don't know that I love that deal. Two, I don't know that the Oilers need an extra top six winger if Jake DeBrusque isn't necessarily a top six winger, right? Like, we think when he's playing as well as he can play, he could be that, but he might not be, right? And so what you want before the deadline is a short thing. You want to spend on a rental who's going to get you production because you know he's done it a million times. A Kyle Palmieri, a Mike Hoffman, a something like that that you know is going to score for you because he always does, right? Jake DeBrusque isn't that either. I like the idea of Jake DeBrusque in theory, but I don't think this is the right time for Edmonton. I just don't think this is the right situation for them. The window to win, the contract situation. I prioritize Puljujärvi at his cost and Yamamoto at his cost over Jake DeBrusque 7 days a week and twice on Sunday. Like, I like the idea of DeBrusque, but I don't like it right now. So I look at it in the summer. I see if Jake DeBrusque is really keen on coming to Edmonton because of all those connections and what he's willing to do if they move him somewhere else or the situation plays out that way. But I don't know that I go after him if I'm Holland. And I certainly don't know if I, because of all the points you guys mentioned, if I move Yamamoto for him, because Yamamoto, when he's not scoring, does a ton, right? He plays penalty kill. He's constantly aggressive in your face. He's not always productive, but he certainly tries his butt off. And that is not always said about Jake DeBrusque, which is why he's out of the lineup sometimes for Boston, right? So I don't know. I'm with you though. I think some team's going to pay for him. I think there's somebody like Colton said, 8. I heard as many as 12. Teams are already kicking tires.
I could see him being like in the right fit. I could see him performing the way Sam Bennett was when he came out of Calgary. I could totally see that being, you know, plausible.
Yep.
In terms of, you know, having to pay the price, I don't think Yamamoto and a retention on DeBrusque gets the deal done, obviously. So if that was the deal, I would take that deal. But it's not going to be the deal because of how many teams are involved. So it's not going to be worth the Oilers to pay the price to get him. Especially because what you guys are saying to bring him in. But if that was the deal that you guys offered me, I would 100% do that. But there's going to be better options come trade deadline that they can add without having to subtract from their current roster, right? And well, that's what's important.
I mentioned Anthony Seo. You mentioned Sam Bennett. And there are people on both sides thinking both things, right? Like, Sam Bennett is a good example. If he does, if Jake DeBrusk becomes Sam Bennett, everybody who didn't trade for him is going to be like, what were we not? Why didn't we do that? Mm-hmm. Right? Because Sam Bennett's turned out to be fantastic. But then you've got the other guys like Anthony Seo didn't do anything. And we don't know what Jake DeBrusk is going to be, right? But some team's going to take a gamble on him. And maybe it works, maybe it doesn't. I don't really know. We got time. How are we doing for time, boys? Do we got time to look at a couple quarter season awards, or do we want to save that for next week?
I mean, we could hit it if we want to do it now.
Okay, well, let's do it. We're at the 20-game mark. We're 15-5 if we're the Edmonton Oilers, so we got to be pleased about what's going on here. So let's take a couple looks at a few different awards, MVP, maybe top defenseman, unsung hero, biggest surprise. We'll do them quick. Maybe we'll do 30 seconds to a minute for each one. Brian, I'll start with you. MVP of the season at the quarter mark for the Oilers.
Leon Draisaitl.
Just Connor McDavid, don't even say anything else. You don't have to say anything else. I'm just kidding.
Yeah, no, that's it. Leon Draisaitl.
Cool. Who you got for MVP?
Same thing. Like, he's, I think he might have just fallen a bit below a goal per game pace now, but it's crazy what he's doing. So yeah.
Yeah, and carrying your fantasy team too. Yeah,
for
those that don't know and haven't watched our fantasy videos, Colin's ahead of everybody because of the Draisaitl pick. although Julian's got a pretty decent team too. Okay, and who's your MVP there, Julian?
Nah, I'm going Draisaitl too. I had him at breaking the 150 mark this year, so I'm gonna stick with it.
Yeah, I'm clean sweep. Draisaitl too. And that's amazing when you consider before the season would have started. I think any of us would have said that, right? After what McDavid did last year in 56 games, we're like, everybody's thinking. But Draisaitl was the quietest 100 and whatever points like in history of the Oilers, right? Like, he just keeps going and going and going. So can't be surprised. All right, let's go in reverse order, kind of like our snake draft. Julian, I'll start with you. Top defenseman. Who has been the top defenseman for the Oilers so far? And this might be a tricky one only because
it is a tricky one. I mean, like, could you argue Cody Ceci? Like, I think that might be the guy who's been the most consistent. You know, there's a couple options, but to me, he's shown to be that stabilizing presence that the Oilers kind of missed with the Larson departure. And I think that he's kind of slid into that role pretty seamlessly. And, he's been the most consistent and he's been healthy for the almost up until this point of the season until the COVID hit. So, you know what? I'm going to say Cody Ceci.
I'm going to have him somewhere else in this conversation, but I don't know if I pick him as the top defenseman, but I get where you're going with this. Colton, who do you have?
I know he's not having his best season, especially compared to how good he was last year, but I think Darnell Nurse, just with all the minutes he plays and everything, he's so valuable to the team, even games where some fans will get on him for some mistakes he makes or whatever. I think a lot of those come because he's playing such monster minutes. So I think he's one of their most important players, and I'll give him the best defenseman.
Brian, who you got?
Yeah, I'll go Darnell Nurse too. I know he quite hasn't been on the level of last year, but I think for all the points Colton says, he's still been the best defenseman on this team consistently. And it's a pretty limited category, I guess, because, you know, there's so many players that haven't even played enough games to qualify for this award. So yeah. Other like the guys that have played at least half the games, I'll go with Darnell Nurse.
The reason I'm going to pick Darnell Nurse too is because of the contract he signed and the pressure that was placed upon him the second he signed it. Right. Like the minute he signed that 9 million, whatever monster of a deal it was, everybody's like, oh my God, you're overpaying this guy. Yeah, he had one good year. Yeah, he played a lot of minutes, but he's not worth it. He's worth it. He's proved it already. Like, he's absolutely worth every penny of that contract just for the minutes he plays, the situation he plays in. Sometimes they don't even put him on the power play, but they could. Right. Like, he's that steady. And I believe, and I said it last year, the more he plays, the better he is. Right. So, yeah, I'm with you guys on that one. For me, he's been the MVP as far as defensemen go. Colton, let's start with you. The unsung hero. Who would you pick at the quarter mark for the Oilers to be the unsung hero here?
You know, I know he's had a tendency, and a lot of fans get on him, and he still hasn't really completely shaken, like, the one soft goal thing, game kind of thing. But I think Koskinen, just with his record and kind of just how much, I don't want to say pressure, but just, like, he was getting hated on all offseason long, even when he got to training camp there. So I think he's been able to respond in a pretty admirable way, given that Mike Smith went down. He's really had to carry the load, and I think he's done a really good job.
Julian, who would you go with for this one?
I'm going to go with Zach Hyman, just because of, you know, even when he's not scoring, he got off to that torrid pace to start the season, but he cooled off for a bit, and then he found the back of the net recently against Vegas. So even when he's not producing points, he's doing it in other ways, shorthanded, being that energy guy. I think he's a good guy to have in the locker room, and I think it's going a long way to help bring the team together. So he's going to be mine.
Both good picks. Brian, you sticking with either one of those two?
Leon Draisaitl. because what from what he does relative to the attention and love he gets, he actually is probably the unsung hero. Because it's fair like the guy can go out and score four goals, and this is going to sound like I'm hating on McDavid. That's not at all the case. But it's like, oh, did you see what McDavid did 3 weeks ago when he went through the entire team? And meanwhile, Draisaitl scored. Like, oh, I'm scoring a goal every night. And people are still talking about this highlight from 4 weeks ago. So Leon Draisaitl, just because he doesn't get nearly the love he deserves.
You know what? The best thing about the Draisaitl pick for me is that his media conferences are
getting better and better.
They're right? Both like, fantastic. Those comments alone just bring everybody down a level. Like, not in a bad way, but just calm everybody down. Like, he's talking about McDavid fluffing the one-timers, or he's talking about this. Like, he just brings a calming effect to this team that nobody really pays attention to, but it's super important, right? Like,
yeah.
And I believe that's the case, but I'm going to go with Colton. I think Mikko Koskinen has been really good. He's shaken off the rep. Every once in a while, he lets in a bad one, but he's not letting the first shot in on the games like he did repeatedly last year. He's been much better high glove. He's let in a couple stinkers, but he bounces back right away. And I've only one time felt like they've played him too much. And typically last year, I always felt like they were playing him too much. Mm-hmm. And the minute that happened, you're like, oh man, he's going to go downhill. Only one time where I was like, oh, I think they won too many games. And then it looked like he was a little overworked. So I thought Koskinen has looked really solid. And because he's actually literally won the Oilers games they did not deserve to win, that's a huge thing for me. That's a major star in his side, because if without him in the net in some of those games, the Oilers don't win. They don't have a 15-5 record. So that's why I'm going to go with Koskinen. Okay, I'll start this next one. Biggest surprise for me. Ooh, this is a tough one. I probably should have picked myself to go first here because I wasn't prepared for this. Biggest surprise might be a negative a little bit in that Tyson Barrie hasn't been terribly effective. You know, I think he's been a pretty good player, but he's not even come close to, you know, being the guy who's leading the league in scoring for defensemen. He hasn't been used as much on the power play. I knew that Evan Bouchard would get a little more time and we wouldn't see maybe Tyson Barrie as much, but it feels like it's feeling a little longer to take Tyson Barrie to click this season than it did last year, even though he had a slower start last year. Just hasn't quite looked quite at home yet. When he does and he clicks, it'll be great because he'll start punching in points like crazy, but he hasn't done it yet for me. So I'm a little surprised that Tyson Barrie hasn't gone off to a better start and gotten a few more points because I think the Oilers could use him. So that's been a big surprise for me, not necessarily a positive one, but just kind of like, I'm a little surprised it's taken so long. Brian, what about you? Biggest surprise of the season?
Yeah, I might go with negative on this one too. I guess if I had two positive surprises, I'll just say them quickly because you guys already talked about them, would be Koskinen and CC have both exceeded what I thought, but probably Derek Ryan. I had big hopes for him and he just hasn't performed as I thought he would. He's been good in the draw, which was, you know, one of the major reasons they brought him, but I thought he'd score more. He's had some real gaps in his game defensively, which I thought he'd be a reliable checker for this team. So that would be it for me, is that Derek Ryan has just not performed to the level that I thought anywhere near. And I might have put a little bit too much weight on him at the start of the season, but that's what I thought.
That's speaking of surprise. I'm surprised with that answer, to be totally honest with you.
He's a minus 10 right now, too.
Yeah, and he's been out for a little bit, right? He had some injuries and stuff, so it's been a little harder to get a real judge on him. But, yeah, I thought he was been decent. So I'm a little surprised by your answer, but I'll give you that. That's absolutely fair. You don't hear much about him, that's for sure, right? Like, he hasn't been one of those guys that stands out in any way, and I don't know if that's good or bad. Colton, what about you? Biggest surprise of the season?
Yeah, I was going to go with Cody Ceci too. We already touched on him. I wasn't sure what to expect with him. So I think I'll say in a positive surprise, I guess, would be Zach Cassian. I know I was hoping that he would be able to have a bounce back year. I don't know how confident I was in it, but I think so far in the games he's been able to play, obviously he missed a bit of time, but I think he's looked really good, and then was playing with McDavid recently too. So I think he's been a lot better already than last year. And I think just having fans in the building again has helped with that a lot.
Yeah, oh, that's a good one. And being on the top line right now, I don't know that I would have predicted that. Julian, you got the last one for biggest surprise.
Surprised Brian didn't say it, but I'll go Stuart Skinner.
Not surprised. That's the thing. Yeah, I knew that was going to happen.
Predicting this the whole time.
Fair enough. So I'll say it then. So yeah, so Stuart Skinner, I think just the way he's been able to come in and just be, from what he looked last year to this year, it looks like he's a different type of goalie. And you know, he's kept them Oilers in multiple games this year where they had no business even being close, like we were saying with Kostyan. So just the fact that he's younger and, you know, has shown that he can be relied upon to be in a tandem with Koskinen, I think that goes a long way for where the Oilers are in their goaltending and allows them to plan ahead for possibly however long Mike Smith's going to be out and into next year. And especially with Koskinen's contract coming up, that it gives them some play with what they're able to do with the available cap.
Yeah, I will say this, though. Big surprises. There's been a couple that we didn't even mention. Like, Duncan Keith's been better than most people expected. Philip Roberg filled in. He's been really good. Like, there's been a lot of positive surprises. So that's a good sign, right? To close things off, Brian, I'll start with you. 15-5, first 20 games. What do you figure the record's going to be the next 20? That member, they got 7 of 8 at home now. I know the injuries or whatever, but they've got a really good opportunity to win a handful.
So you're saying what is it going to be after 40 games or what it's going to be for the next
What do you think it'll be like over the next 20? Are they going to be another 15-5, 10-10, 18-2? Like, where are you putting this team over the next 20 games?
12-6-2.
Okay. Colton, what about you? That's a pretty decent record. I'd take that.
Yeah, I was going to say 12-8. I'll say 13-7 now. Just I think injuries maybe could play a bit, and 15-5 is just such a good record. I don't know if they'll be able to do that again, but yeah, 13-7, I'll say.
Julian?
Yeah, I'm more in that range of 13 wins and then whatever else make, I guess would be like 4 losses, 3 OT losses, something like that, or 3-3, something like that. 13-3-3 would make, I don't even know. What is that? Is that 20?
You're right. First time. 13-3-4.
What, 19? Yeah.
So I'm close. Thinking around 13 wins. I mean, they should be good enough to still win, and they're really good at home. So I think that they can carry that.
Yeah. It'll be really interesting to see if they get, like, of the 7 of 8 games they have at home here over the next 8 games, if they have a really strong record, who knows what this team could do. There's just this mentality around them that they just, like, think they're going to win all the games, no matter what they're facing, no matter how many guys are down, no matter what's going on. Like, they really, I get the sense that they really want to prove that they are so much better than the first round elimination. And because of that, I think they win games maybe they shouldn't win. But I'm going to say 13-7. I'll go a little bit less than what they were at right now with the 15-5, but I still think they're above 500. I still think they're in a good spot. I still think they're probably close to the top spot in the Pacific Division. I don't know if Vegas is coming on. Calgary, I'm not sure if they can maintain it, but we'll see. Yeah, it's going to be an interesting 20 games. But if they can get a good start here for the next 8, that'll be really, really – they need to take advantage of this homestand. Like, they really
and it might be a little bit of run-and-gun hockey, so it'll be entertaining for us for sure. If these defensemen are out, they might have to score some more.
Yeah, well, it starts tonight. For people who are watching this video right now, it's going to be tonight against the Pittsburgh Penguins. We don't really know who's all going to be in the lineup, but we'll see how many people they're missing and what happens with the Penguins. Hopefully they get a good run here. Let's close her off there, guys. I appreciate it. Colton, Brian, Julian, thank you very much for talking with us at the quarter mark of the season so far. It's been a lot of fun. We'll see what happens with the Jake DeBrus talk. We'll see what happens with the injuries, and we'll go from there. But for everybody else that's watching this video, there's a few ways you can get a hold of us. Go to thehockeyraiders.com. Check out the Hockey Raiders on Facebook, the Hockey Raider Twitter. Join the newsletter, morningskate.io, or check out the YouTube channel for all the content for all the great guys that are doing stuff for their respective teams. Lots of content there. So thanks for joining us. Another edition of THW Oilers Overtime. We'll talk to you guys next week.